Thank you, Nick. First of all, I'd like to thank Nick and the organizers to invite me for the talk. And also, I'd like to acknowledge my co-investigators, especially Benjamin Mann, who is a postdoc, and also he just left, and he did the most of work on the high-resolution mass spec work, and also my collaborators from Environmental Molecular Science Laboratory at the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory, Stephen Callister, Nicholas Tolik, and Rosalie Chun, Aurora Robinson. And the research was funded by Department of Energy and Office of Biological Environmental Research and under this called the NG, Next Generation Ecosystem Experiments. So as many of you already know that the permafrost stores a large amount of organic carbon, as Dr. Ross is talking about this morning, that roughly about 1,500 or 1,700 gigatons of organic matter stored at permafrost, as representing one of the largest terrestrial, organic carbon terrestrial environment. This picture was taken at the Barrow Environmental Observatory of, in Barrow, Alaska. As you can see, that the vast, a huge area covered with grass and with shrubs, and either with dead or decomposed or partially decomposed organic materials. Just so much organic in the soil. As a matter of fact, if you take some just surface water and pour water, you can see the color of the pour water is very dark and it contains minimal concentrations of organic carbon in the surface water as well in the deep pore water. So a lot of carbon. So, but of course now we are all concerned about this carbon being degraded as climate warms. And it releases, lots of CO2 and methane, and that's basically a big concern. And now, what we're trying to do here is to try to understand how, understand so how so organic matter degrades, and what controls its degradation rates, as so many great talks we have heard this morning. And another important objective under this program is that we try to identify, hopefully, the individual organic components that serves as precursors or intermediates in microbial degradation. And also try to understand if, this organic matter behaves similarly in reaction with minerals or something like that. okay. So talking about soil organic matter, as we know that how much we know about soil organic matter? It's really not much, I guess. All we know is that it's a degradation product or residual of the plants, animals, it's certainly a natural product that contains so much complex mixture of organic compounds with unknown molecular structures. So this is a mass spectral data. Basically, it's very messy. I just want to show you is that, as Nancy actually just gave a talk a few minutes ago, that it just shows if you inject dissolved organic matter sample into a high-resolution mass spec, so here's what you see. You will see thousands of signals, up to like 5,000 or molecules you can identify. And this actually is a kind of simplified model of organic compounds taken from the paper by Simpson et al. Basically showing that the organic matter is more like commingled with these different fractions of organic molecules like peptides, polysaccharides, or lignins, and commingled with some metal ions, like especially divalent or trivalent ions like calcium, as Dr. Sparks talked about this morning, and iron, whatever. And we also know that soil organic matter interact with minerals and they form intimate organic complexes. As we have heard many talks that these interactions between soil organic matter and minerals are important in determining one's partitioning of organic matter onto minerals. Excuse me. The other thing is about vulnerability to microbial degradation. And now the other thing that can we also identify this organic matter, how this organic, different organic components interact with minerals? Do they behave similarly when they interact with minerals? Okay. So how do we characterize these organic materials? So conventional techniques that we have been using is using FTIR, spectroscopy, UV visible, and fluorescence and X-ray absorption spectroscopy. And all these techniques are great, provide a lot of information about what specific functional groups or specific molecular characteristics interacting with minerals or how they react with microorganisms. But these techniques can only give you, bulk properties of organic materials, but then really tells you exactly what type of organic matter, organic compounds interacting with minerals or reacting with microorganisms. So the other, wet chemical techniques, we can use fractionation techniques, conventional techniques, just use acid and base, you can get fulvic acid versus humic acid, or use size exclusion technique to look at, use chromatography technique as separation techniques, or sorption techniques to separate different components of these organic materials. But no matter what you do, there's still a mixture of organic compounds. But again, this organic matter contains thousands of different type of molecules. So all these techniques can give you some sort of bulk properties, but won't tell you exactly what sort of molecules are there. So to give you some examples, using sorption techniques, you can you can look at the different molecules sorb onto the minerals. This is a typical sorption isotherm. You look at dissolved organic matter sorption. On the iron oxide, you just mix with iron oxide with dissolved organic matter. You will see a fraction of organics will be sorbed onto the iron oxides, and the sorption reaches a plateau, because surface of iron, of course, has limited surface area. So what do you want? What we try to understand is that is this sorption, try to show that these different organic molecules behave differently. They don't sorb equally on the these mineral surfaces. So when we look at this, sorption isotherm, and then we look at desorption process, so what we observe is that desorption seems like it's almost irreversible when we look at the desorption processes. So what happens here, the mechanism here, we think that what happens is that it's due to the fractional sorption of different organic compounds. In other words, that some organic molecules are preferentially sorbed compared with other molecules onto mineral surfaces. So again, they're indicating that these different organic matters are different, behaves differently in terms of sorption. So I can show you some additional evidence using IR spectroscopy to look at the organic matter fraction sorbed on the minerals and those left in the solution phase. Basically, what we did is, like I showed you earlier, we add mixed organic matter with iron oxides, and then you separate the oxides and analyze what's left in the solution phase, what's on the surface of iron oxide. And you can repeat this experiment by adding additional iron oxides into the, whatever left in the solution phase. So this number 1, 2, 3 just means that the sequence I add a different portion of iron oxide into the solution. So what you see is that the sorbed organic matter is very different from what's left in the solution phase. So what you see is that the sorbed organic matter shows enrichment of the aromatic organic compounds, so as indicated by this peak at about 1600 wave number. So in contrast, what you see that the aromatic components in the solution phase decreases over as you add more and more iron oxide. On the other hand, you see your carbohydrates organic matter fraction increases as you absorption. So again, indicating that some fractions of organic matter just left behind, whereas aromatic organic components, are preferentially absorbed onto the iron oxide particles. So that's again indicating that these organic matter are different. They react with minerals. Now similarly, when we did the experiments, look at the microbial degradation processes, that you will see different components seems to be degraded over time, of they degraded first compared with what you added in. Now I will get back to this again in a minute. And you can also use different techniques like fluorescence spectroscopic techniques and again that NMR or many other techniques to look at the changes of the organic matter compounds either before after absorption or before and after microbial degradation. Again, that these techniques can give you, information about what kind of functional groups and they interacting with minerals or being degraded. But again, that's all these techniques can only give you this kind of bulk kind of information. So, for the last from my talk, we're talking about what we're trying to do is using this called FTICR, the Fourier Transform Ion Cyclone Resonance Mass Spectroscopy, to try to identify these different organic components. As Nancy just gave a very nice talk earlier about using this technique to profile organic materials. So what we're trying to do is try to identify the components of organic matter that serve as precursors in microbial processes that generate small organic molecules or precursors, intermediates to the production of CO2 and methane. And so as a proof of concept, we did a quick kind of incubation experiment and then try to profile this organic matter before and after the incubation. And we also try to propose a CHO index, CHO index, and hopefully to use this index to represent the terrestrial carbon kind of thing. Hopefully modelers can use this index to represent different organic pools for the degradation of carbon. So again, that it's a very simple kind of microcosm experiment, and we tried to accelerate this process. We only did a kind of 40-day incubation at a room temperature, a very quick experiment. And after experiments, we did extraction of the organic matter with, either water-soluble. We did the extraction with the dilute potassium chloride. We call that fraction the water-soluble organic fraction. And we also did acid-soluble fraction, base-soluble fraction. Now, although I'm not going to show any data on the acid-soluble, partly because the acid-soluble fraction contains so much iron. When talk about permafrost soils, there's tons of iron in the system that when we try to neutralize it, a lot of stuff precipitate out. So we only did the water-soluble and the base-soluble fraction of using this high-resolution mass spec analysis. And so now talking about this high-resolution mass spec, the technique used is called soft ionization technique or electron spray technique to introduce large organic into the gaseous phase. So hopefully that's not going to change, does not cause any fragmentation of the organic material. So it's a nice technique to introduce organic matter directly into the high-resolution mass spec. And now the new tool has a very high, called high resolution, at the subparts per million, mass error. In other words, after the 16, six digits after the decimal point in terms of molecular weight. So with this high resolution of the mass, you can basically use it's called algorithm. You can calculate exactly what's the molecular composition. You know, for instance, let's just give you an example. The molecular weight plus say 14.01557. That's basically it's adding a CH2 to the molecular weight. Okay, so here is one example showing the mass spec analysis of the organic carbon. So what I want to again show you the resolution here that you know in this one you know within 0.3, 325.1 to 325.4. So within 0.3 mass in Dalton that you can see these peaks are fairly well resolved. In other words, again, that gave you very high resolution analysis of the organic carbon, the organic, different organic molecules. So, and Nancy also showed you some of the, you know, representation of these organic molecules. Now, because of you're talking about thousands of molecules, how are you going to present these results and data? So one technique that is commonly used is called the Van Craven diagram. So basically you plot all these molecules on this oxygen to carbon ratio and hydrogen to carbon ratio. So you've got this kind of a plot. And then based on these ratios, you can classify these organic compounds you know, to like lipids or proteins or carbohydrates, lignins, and so on. And now you might argue that now what's the difference between this technique versus other technique? Other technique also tells you it's a lipid or you know carboxyl or hydroxyl. This. But I guess the point here is that this technique contains exact molecular composition, and it can give you thousands of molecular assignments. So yeah, the technique of course cannot really tell you the molecular structure. Okay. But ideally, of course, maybe in the future, the next few years, that the new technique will be able to combine both high-resolution mass spec and spectroscopic technique so that you can identify one molecule and the other thing is structure. So hopefully in the next few years. So, but again, that the point here is that this technique shows the highly, you know, heterogeneous composition of organic matter, as you might expect. Okay. And again, that using this Venn diagram, Craven diagram, you can plot these different poles of organic compounds, organic matter. So now, Ben, he proposed to use a different index. You know, use Craven diagram, you have to use two parameters. One is oxygen to carbon ratio, the other one is hydrogen to carbon ratio. So he proposed to use another index called Chu index. Basically, it's a, 2 times oxygen minus hydrogen divided by carbon. So basically, to use this high-resolution mass spec data to use this Chu index to codify these different organic molecules. And this diagram shows the correlations between Van Craven diagram and Chu index. Basically, Chu index can vary from minus 4 up to positive 4. Basically, the two extreme case, for example, the methane, it has this Chu index of minus 4, whereas CO2 is fully oxidized, which shows a Chu index of plus 4. So I will show you in a minute that how this index might be useful to look at the changes of these different organic compounds. And I also mentioned that the Chu index is also related to the oxidation potential of these organic materials. Again, that the, you know, like methane is fully reduced, so it has minus 4 index, whereas CO2 has positive 4. So it could be useful to you know, use this index to project that carbon turnover rates if you know, organic this organic property is considered in the modeling. So when we look at the molecular weight distribution before and after this incubation experiments, so what we see is that we did not see much differences in this base extractable organic matter. Before, that's with a base soluble fraction at time zero versus base soluble fraction at time 40. After 40 days, we see very little differences in terms of molecular weight distribution. Whereas we see differences in this water soluble organic matter fraction. And I will show you a little more. Now, another point I want to make is that most of these organic materials we found is less than about 1,000 Dalton. Now, whether this is biased or not, we are still investigating. Just like Nancy talked about, that certainly all these techniques are biased. We don't know that this analytical technique may be biased to some smaller molecular weight or less than 1,000 molecular weight organic matter. We don't know yet, but we are still investigating this. But nonetheless, that all this data shows that we did not see much differences in the base extractable of organic matter, which is also understandable because experiments was performed under only 40 days. We only got less than 1% organic degradation compared with 40 or 50% organic carbon in the soil. So we only see changes in the water soluble organic matter fraction. So when we compared with this oxidation incubation experiment, what we see is that that we don't see much changes in the base soluble fraction. It's represented by green bars. Whereas we see significant changes in the water soluble fractions, you can see Chu index decreased from -7 to -6.9. So that's again indicating that there's a lot of changes in the water soluble fraction. And I can skip this table, basically showing a similar kind of a trend. So one of the means is that that this data shows some, after 40-day incubation, we see some smaller molecule, organic molecule acids, like acetate and simple organic acid accumulated in the system. So what it means is that this organic precursors degraded into, sometimes small organic acids, and eventually some of this organic acid becomes CO2 and methane. So, as a matter of fact, we can evaluate this by also analyze some of the small organic acid using ion chromatography technique or HPLC technique. And we do see that during this process, initial process, we do see accumulation of these organic acids accumulation in the system. And what we think is that this process could be represented by this kind of carbon cycle. Initially, we have this we call it anaerobic fermentation processes, which generate this organic acid. This is what we see using both mass specs and also by the ion chromatography. And then this switches to methanogenesis, that this organic acid is then being used to generate methane. So I can skip this one, but just to show that there's some correlations between Chu index and the molecular mass. And since look at the Chu index, and the advantage of using Chu index is that you can plot Chu index versus nitrogen and phosphorus or some other things to look at the correlations between the index and the other molecules. So try to quickly conclude my talk. Again, the soil organic matter is highly complex, and understand different organic matter components and their degradation potential interactions with minerals is important to predict carbon degradation and climate feedback. And again, this high-resolution mass spec is useful and can offer a very, to profile the complex organic mixture and elemental composition, but also it has limitations. Again, it won't tell you the molecular structure. And we show that the degradation process is showing some dynamic changes from initial fermentation to methanogenesis, but I didn't show lots of data on that. And actually, Tanya has another talk to show some of these processes. And then CHO index might be useful to numerically codify the organic molecules and maybe utilize in the climate modeling or, you know, carbon degradation modeling. So I think that's, yeah, some future research needs that the organizers ask to. So again, that I think that identifies the different organic components that serve as precursor in organic matter degradation. It's important, you know, to understand, because considering organic matter is such a complex mixture. So the reaction pathways, mechanisms, and certainly how they relate to organic carbon and nitrogen cycling, that's also important to understand. And so ultimately, an accurate molecular scale description of organic matter can lead to improved modeling of terrestrial carbon cycling. So with that, I thank you for your attention.
Well, if there is any questions, just one question, and we will keep moving. Yes, Aaron, go ahead.
Sure. I'm wondering, you mentioned your talk, but also Nancy's reflected on this technique, and I'm wondering if there has been, by your group or others, an approach to simply ask the question, which of these compounds persists? So you make some perturbation, right, and then you get, okay, they shift maybe this way, but if you look at your CME individual compounds, so it ought to be possible to say, all of these compounds, which ones remain, and of course, a lot of them change. So has that approach been done, or is that useful, or?
Yes, certainly, and that's what we hope to understand. And as a matter of fact, one experiment we showed is that the organic, especially those organic sorbed onto minerals, and we think those are more, you know, more aromatic compounds seems to stick onto this iron oxides of minerals, and more stronger, so they are more maybe more recalcitrant to some extent. Well, which is just like, you know, many folks talked about this morning, that this organic mineral interactions. But think about organic mineral interactions also, that these different organic molecules are preserved differently. Only some molecules are being preserved, not, you know, they are not equally preserved, I think. Yeah, that's what we try to understand.
That's an excellent explanation. Thank you very much, Paul.